Pass the Mic is made possible by a grant from the T. Rowe Price Foundation, recognizing 45 years of advancing thriving communities and building financial well-being. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the participants and do not reflect the views of the T. Rowe Price Foundation, T. Rowe Price, or any of their subsidiaries or affiliates.
You ready?
Yes.
Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Pass the mic.
Hand that to me.
Pass it over here.
Pass the mic.
Welcome to Pass the Mic. The workplace for women is changing faster than many organizations know how to respond. Younger women are redefining boundaries. Seasoned women are redefining relevance. And in the middle of it all is a question many women are quietly asking. What does a successful career even look like now? I'm Dr. Alethea Tucker, and I'll be your host for today's episode. I'm a reinvention strategist and speaker who is passionate about helping women step into leadership, clarity, and purpose in every stage of life. I'm also proud to serve as the president of Miss Corporate America Maryland, where we highlight and support women who are making a real impact in their professions and communities. Today, we're going to talk about how different generations of women are navigating leadership, risk, and reinvention in both government and the corporate world. First, I'm joined by Dr. Serelda L. Herbin. She's a retired U.S. Army senior officer and disabled combat veteran who has served in 3 war zones and now uses her leadership experience to mentor and guide leaders across generations. A transformational leader, speaker, and CEO of Coaching That Cares by Serelda. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much, Alethea, and thanks for inviting me.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to have you, and I'm equally as thrilled to be able to approach this topic with you and get your perspective. So, how is the current political and social climate affecting how women, especially younger professionals versus women 40 and over, you know, that's my category, how they feel about speaking up and being visible in government spaces?
I will tell you, working at the Pentagon, it was my last job in uniform, and there were different age groups there. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I noticed conversationally, there were different perspectives of things, whereas an older person in the workforce would say, we do this because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
The younger ones in the workforce would say, well, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if A, B, C, and D? Now, I will tell you, I learned more about the younger workforce in their moral convictions. They were less divisive.
Hmm.
They were less exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
They were more inclusive of different races, nationalities, sexual orientations, any of those things. And so it was really refreshing on one token, but there was a lot of space for mentorship needed. I like the reverse mentorship that happens in the federal government in places where I've worked, where those senior executives and those general officers or flag officers or even presidential appointees would allow junior employees to do reverse mentoring, where they would allow them to come into their offices and give input. We had a lot of cross-cultural dexterity that was happening in the workplace because you would have never gotten a rich source of information about yourself on paper, on a 360 assessment,
mm-hmm.
or any peer-to-peer assessment by allowing someone to switch roles. And it was very powerful.
Wow. That sounds powerful. I like that because, you know, in order for us to be able to work with all generations, mm-hmm. we really need to understand both generations.
That's
you
right.
know, and I've been talking a lot about how, you know, I kind of come from this mindset, and we both probably have. And then, you know, we've got the younger generation. But the only way that we're going to find that sweet spot in the middle is to be able to listen to one another and work together. So that reverse mentoring really means something.
Absolutely.
You know, where they're able to also tell us. And, you know, they've really got a grip on some things that we may not have a grip on.
We may not have the courage to say it.
Exactly. And that is not a problem for them.
Mm-mm.
That
you
is
know,
not a problem.
I think the other thing that I think about, I was in the workplace after my uniform assignment of retirement. Yes, I am retired. I know I may look super young, but I have retired once already. And one of the things that the general officer said in the meeting, he said, you know, I think we have a communication problem. We're not talking. We're not getting the mission through. And so I was just hired as the chief diversity officer and director, one in that organization. And he said, well, Dr. Serelda, what do you think? Now, I wasn't expecting to even talk. This is my first day. Yeah. I said, me? He said, yeah, you. And I said, he said, what do you think? You think we have a communication problem? I said, no, sir, I don't. Everybody in the room turned and looked at me. I'm like, oh, my God. I took this deep breath. Mm-hmm. And I said, we have policies. Mm-hmm. We have SOPs. We have websites. We have internet, intranet. We have Teams calls. We have chats. But we're not talking. Yeah. I said, we have all of these forms of communication and information. Sir, we don't have a communication problem. We have a connection problem. Mm. He said, huh. I said, we can have all of the forms of strategic communication. We have all of these campaigns. But if we are not speaking to each other and understanding what's being said, we will never get anywhere. We're running parallel and not perpendicular.
Wow. That is powerful. You've got all the tools there. You're just not using them.
Exactly.
Absolutely. It's not how we're doing it. It's the fact that we're not even putting forth an effort to implement things, to start it.
And, you know, another thing, Dr. Alethea, with the federal government, we are creatures of habit. We really are. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have to change anything, we won't.
Yeah.
We won't. Because sometimes it's so hard to cycle through the staffing process. It's so hard to cycle through the taskers, and you don't want to be on the red list.
Oh,
and
no.
Then you're going to go stand in someone's office. But to be able to be agile in that process and understand, wait a minute, there's something in here that's a gap. Let's fill this gap mm-hmm. so that we can have more efficiency. And considering the drawdown, the slimming of the federal government, mm-hmm. it's even more necessary to have proper communication and effective
yes.
communication for better efficiency.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Now, you mentioned how things, you know, and we all know that's really slimmed down in
yes.
the past year, okay? Keeping that in mind, where do you see mid-career and senior women feeling the most vulnerable right now in relevance, opportunity, and advancement? Because things look way different. You know, the things that we were able to kind of count on and depend on, you know, being there mid-career, it's kind of changed a bit.
It has.
So give me your perspective.
You know, one of the things that I realized, and I'm on LinkedIn often because, of mm-hmm. course, that's one of the professional social media sites. Many women in those age groups are starting businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Many women in those age groups are not just taking their knowledge and throwing it out on the table. They are much more mindful of what they say and what they're sharing. There was a scenario that I read on LinkedIn a few weeks ago where a lady went into a meeting, created this huge project, and someone else took it and put their name on it. Mm. And she said she was burnt out. She was tired of being the person creating it, but she was never the person that was rewarded for it.
Yeah.
And so you have on the older end where people are getting closer to that age where they can retire. And then you have maybe someone like me, for example. I retired from the military at age 40.
Mm-hmm.
And I made 50 this year. Yay,
Yay.
Me. But I'm still not close to retirement
right.
age.
Right.
So do I shift and pivot into my full-time business, or do I leverage where I am until I want to move and become very comfortable and then pivot?
Yeah.
And I think there are more options because we have been pushed in a corner, if you really want to use the right term, in this environment to say, you don't have to stay. We have this fear of success. So it's such a complex environment, but we can do it. I think all it starts with is start.
So let me ask you this. Across generations of women in government right now, what differences do you see in how younger women and seasoned women approach stability? How do they approach risk in long-term careers?
One of the things that I've learned in my studies and research is that there are six generations in our workforce. And being in a workforce where you have a younger age, where the older age could really be their grandparents. One is more focused on stability while the other is more focused on what is it going to be for me? What can I get out of this? How is the workforce going to align with my moral values? Mm-hmm. Now, I understand with my own mother and grandmother having been in the workforce before I started, I understand the devastating effects of some of the things that they've gone through. So they taught me sometimes out of their own fear. Mm-hmm. And it kept me from actually exploring the workplace the way that I could have. So I can take my own experience and really answer that question with conviction. I thought going into a place, you stay as long as you can, you do a great job, and you get promoted. Well, that's not always the case. That is not always the case, Dr. Alethea. And then you have the younger workforce. My son just graduated from LSU. He's 22 years old. And his mindset is, how long do I have to stay at work? What time am I getting off? Exactly. And how much leave do I have so that I can have fun? That was not my story. So there are two totally different stories in my household even today.
Yeah. And that's amazing. And I can definitely relate to what it is that you're talking about. I have very similar situation going on in my house right now. And, you know, in coming from an HR perspective, it really is a total mind shift. It is a culture shift in what you're seeing now compared to how we grew up in HR, so to speak, how we grew up in work. And it is totally different.
You know, I was talking to my son, and when he got his job, the job said he needed to be there at 7:55 a.m. Okay, well, that sounds right. The government is very similar. I may not have a meeting until 12,
right?
But I'm supposed to report at 7:55. So he was, at first he was excited. He's getting up at 6:30, and then he would get up at 7:30, and then he would get up at 8:30. And I'm like, buddy, what time do you have to be at work? Yeah. I told you it's at 7:55. Oh, I don't have my first class until 11:20. Yeah. Fella, you're going to get fired. You better get up and you better go to work right now. So he actually talked to HR and he talked to his supervisor and they explained it to him. He was like, I would have never thought that. I didn't have to do that in college. But this is not college. This is the workforce. So that mental mindset, that mental shift is extremely important. I'm glad that he's in a space where he can see I'm getting up in the morning. I'm coming back a little later. And those are necessary traits and attributes to make sure that you are going to keep a job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so true. You find yourself having to remind more people these days, I'll say that, definitely absolutely, of the younger generation, that this is what you need to do, not just to get in, but to stay and sustain where you are.
And you're constantly being, you're answering why.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean why?
Yeah.
You have to go to work.
I know. Exactly. Oh, my goodness. We could talk a long time about this. But listen, we're going to have to wrap up. Just tell me, what is it that you would tell a woman in her 40s or 50s who came to you and said, I still want to grow? What is it you would tell her?
I would always end and begin with Arthur Ashe's quote, start where you are, do what you can, and use what you got.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. That's powerful. I love that.
Absolutely.
Listen, thank you, Dr. Serelda,
so
much
welcome.
For being here with me. This has been so rich. I've been speaking with Dr. Serelda Urban about women at work leadership across generations. When we come back, I'll invite Sierra Morgan into the conversation to talk about our topic from the perspective of the millennial generation.
You're listening to Pass the Mic on 88.1 WYPR. Want to be part of the conversation? Suggest a guest host for Pass the Mic by writing to us at ptm@bemorepublicmedia.org. You can listen to more episodes of Pass the Mic at our website, wypr.org, or wherever you get podcasts. Baltimore Public Media. Community amplified.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Alethea Tucker, president of Miss Corporate America Maryland, and Sierra Morgan has joined us. Sierra is an HR executive, a 15-year caregiver. She founded the Caregiver Compass Academy. Through her firm, Rose HR, Sierra helps business owners streamline operations while advocating for caregiver policies and inspiring women to lead with excellence. We're talking about women in the workplace and leadership across generations. Welcome, Sierra.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm thrilled to be here and talk to you about this. And I'm excited about approaching this from a different perspective. And I know that you'll be able to help us to do just that.
Definitely.
Let me start by asking you this. How do you see generational differences shaping how women approach ambition, loyalty, how they approach work-life boundaries, all of this in the corporate environment right now?
Well, I would say one of the biggest shifts that we're seeing is that ambition looks different across all generations. Many women who have come up earlier in generations, they were taught loyalty means staying with a company long term, working hard, proving your commitment through sacrifice, sometimes even at the expense of your own personal life. But younger women such as myself, we're redefining ambition.
I like that. So what I'm hearing from you is that the focus is definitely more so on balance, and that is taking priority as you make your career decisions. And that is a little different from how things have gone in the older generations, I'll say that. And definitely, I think a little different from how we have seen things, I know, in the government. As Dr. Serelda was sharing with us earlier, the culture has always been the stay and make it culture. And I hear that that's not really where we're going in this generation. You know, stay and make it fit no matter what. And what I'm hearing is more of stay and then move when it feels like it doesn't fit.
Right. We just want to keep on going up that ladder. And, you know, we know that there's more out there for us, and we want to keep trying to find it.
How do you think that is impacting, how that generational divide is really starting to impact retention and leadership today?
I think the challenges for organizations is that if they don't create healthy cultures, as you mentioned before, and clear growth paths, they risk losing emerging leaders while disengaging experienced ones. The companies doing it well are creating environments where both generations feel valued.
Valued. And that's a big buzzword that I hear a lot.
It's one of my favorite words.
Yes.
I say it all the time at work.
Yes. Valued. I hear that a lot. But let me ask you this. So in a performance-driven culture, and that's kind of, you know, where things are, who do you believe kind of feels the most pressure right now? Is it the early career woman trying to prove themselves or the experienced woman trying to stay visible and relevant?
Well, I think that's a good question. But honestly, I think that both groups are actually feeling the pressure, but for different reasons. Early career women are navigating the pressure to prove they belong. They're building credibility, trying to find their voice, and learning how to advocate for themselves in environments that may still have traditional expectations. But then experienced women, on the other hand, often face the pressure of staying visible. What's interesting, though, is that both groups can learn from each other.
So what kind of pressure are you feeling at your level and where you are? I know that you are a seasoned HR professional. You've been doing this for a while now. And so you really kind of have a perspective. Your private industry, you're definitely of the younger generation that we've been talking about where that divide exists. Where is the pressure for you?
I think for me, you know, I've been doing HR now for 17 years at various organizations, various industries. But as I tell my other HR friends, I still feel like when I get into an organization, although you think that you're hired for your expertise and being that subject matter expert, I still feel that I have to struggle to be that, you know, visible and be seen, and for people to value what I have to bring to the table and have that respect. For me, respect is a very big thing. And, you know, I just want my voice to be heard because I feel like I have a lot to bring to an industry and I just want to be respected and heard.
You know, my grandmother used to say, well, you know, respect is earned. And that's true, too. Of course, you know, some people may see that as being kind of old school, but it is definitely something that is prevalent in what we're hearing now. How is it that you think you can get the respect that you desire?
I think once they Well, I guess two things. When they see the value of what I bring to the table, like I'm always, you know, blowing out a fire at work, known as the clean out woman. So once they start to see that and build up trust, then I do see those walls start to come down that I can break through. But in the beginning, it's always hot and cold until I can really, you know, get in there and prove my worth, if you will.
Right, yeah. Right. Prove. That's the word I was looking for. It's the proof. Yeah, I think you really hit on it. What leadership behaviors do you think younger women are really kind of openly challenging in corporate culture, more so than older generations of women were expected to tolerate?
I think the younger women were definitely challenging the status quo when it comes to things. So I would say the first one is that long hours automatically equal productivity.
Ah.
We're pushing back on the hustle culture. And then the second thing I would say is transparency, more communication, open communication. And then lastly, I think that today's generation is far more willing to speak up and have that voice. And in many ways, that's pushing organizations towards healthier cultures overall.
Yeah. It's either that they adapt and recognize that that's happening, or they see a dwindling workforce that's available to them as the middle and senior workforce is starting to move away. They have to kind of change their mindset to be able to continue and move along with this new generation of workforce. Mm-hmm. And I found it interesting you're saying the hustle culture is a no-go.
Yeah.
No hustle culture. And, you know, previous, I want to say, you know, earlier generations thought, you know, that was working hard. That's how you made it. You know, you had to work hard. You had to put in the time. You had to do the extra.
Yeah. And I like to think that I have a very strong work ethic. Mm-hmm. I'm very big on how things should go. And, you know, sometimes I can be a little black and white. I'm very guilty of that. I'm sure many people would agree. But, you know, nonetheless, I think to the impact on where the world is now compared mm-hmm. to where the world was with the seasoned professionals, these seasoned women, to how it is now, we have to have those a better work-life balance, because we won't survive in the way that we're having to work or companies expect us to work nowadays mm-hmm. compared to back in the day.
Mm.
My opinion, but yes.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And, you know, Dr. Serelda said that there is a certain mentorship that needs to happen on both levels. How do you feel about that? What do you feel? And I think you've been, you know, talking about it just a bit, where you feel your generation can really provide some insight to the other, you know, to the older generation. How do you feel about mentoring kind of going both ways?
No, I love it. And it's something, you know, as an HR director that I always encourage my employees to do, because any organization in any industry that I've worked, there's always been that seasoned woman and then that new generation.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they end up being besties. They look at the seasoned professional as like the mom figure, and they want to, they learn a lot from them, not just, you know, how to do things actually from a day-to-day perspective, but just in life in general, and just understanding different cultures, the expectations, how to move when no one's looking, and, you know, all these things. And then in turn, I think as the younger professional, I think that, you know, we learn more about that work ethic, because sometimes if we look at other people in our generation, we might not see that same strong work ethic unless we just look at our families. But in the workplace, I think there's a lot of knowledge sharing that can go on. Just like I mentioned about the technology, well, technology and doing things a different way is very important. However, I know some seasoned professionals are not wanting and open to change.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they have to get pushed to it in organizations. But nonetheless, I see a lot of the younger professionals trying to help them with that and get them used to the technology. But I think it's a partnership that is built.
That is built. Wow. And I can attest to this just in the year that we have been working together in Miss Corporate America, Maryland. I have really treasured and valued your perspective coming into the organization, and just being honest, you know, just the two different generations, you've really given some perspective. So I can definitely see where, you know, the giving on both levels is helpful. It is productive And I can attest to the fact that, yeah, that mentorship kind of needs to happen on two levels there.
Yeah, so I think everybody just needs to be open.
Yes.
That's the key thing. If you're
Absolutely.
Not open, then you're just going to lose out on something that you really could have learned or gained from.
Yeah, yeah. For the woman who's kind of watching and who's mid-career, or for the woman who's listening in this case, who's mid-career or senior level and, you know, kind of wondering if she still fits into the corporate world, because you bring kind of the corporate perspective here, what would you tell her about reinventing her role without losing her confidence and her credibility that is so important for us as women? What would you tell her?
It definitely is important. Mm-hmm. I would say that your experience is not outdated. It's valuable. Mm-hmm. And we keep throwing out the word valuable, I know,
yeah.
but it's the word of the day.
Right.
And so, and reinvention doesn't mean starting over. It just means evolving your influence, you know, just adjusting.
Right.
And I think women at the mid or senior career level have something incredibly powerful, perspective. They've navigated challenges, led teams. I think the key is to stay curious and be open to learning new tools, as I mentioned. And I think that sometimes we do that imposter syndrome
yes.
kicks in. But in fact, this is often the stage where women move from simply succeeding in their roles to shaping the culture around them. And that's not the end of relevance. That's just leadership at its highest level.
Mm-hmm. Mm, I love that. Well, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me
Anytime.
Here today, helping to bring the perspective from the millennial generation. I certainly appreciate that. I want to thank both of my guests, Dr. Serelda Hervin and Sierra Morgan, for joining me on today's show. You've been listening to Pass the Mic. I'm Dr. Alethea Tucker, and to learn more, visit WYPR.org.
Okay, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. Ding, 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 ding.
Pass the Mic is produced by Elizabeth Nonamaker, senior producer Mallory Pinkard-Pierre, and executive producer Amy Walters. Theme music from Rob Tim. This is a presentation of Baltimore Public Media.